Hello, you're listening to Wine Blast, the podcast that brings wine to life, with me, Susie Barry, and my husband and fellow master of wine, Peter Richards. So, we're all sort of starting to emerge into this post-lockdown world, but it's still a bit weird, isn't it?
Weird's a really good word. Well, I think everything, the lockdown's been weird. Trying to come out of the lockdown's been weird as well. I was thinking about this yesterday. Do you know what it reminds me of? Do you know what it feels like?
Go on.
It feels like, and I would say this, but it feels like the morning after a really heavy night. You know that feeling, you know, when you emerge, you know.
I do know that feeling.
Yeah, you do. Okay, fair enough. I think lots of people relate. You kind of come out and you're a bit sort of, your eyes don't work, you're blinking. So everything's a bit blurry. And most importantly, you're slightly paranoid. You're slightly worried you've missed something really important. Something's happened. You maybe blanked it out.
Something, yeah, I think.
Either something you did or whatever it was. Yeah. And, you know, partly because everyone else seems to be a little bit disproving. A little bit too loud, you know, and you just don't really know what's going on. You're unsure, and I think that's the feeling.
I know. I think we can all relate to that. I really do. We sort of touched on this with hotelier Robin Hutson, didn't we, in our last episode. About how hotels and restaurants could reopen. They're pushing for the 1 meter rather than 2 meter social distancing rule. But it's still all a bit confusing.
Yeah, because you hear all this different stuff about 1 metre versus 2 metre, and you think, well, we've got to get the economy back going. But on the other hand, there's more evidence emerging about 2 metre being much safer.
I know. It's
so difficult.
And the truth is, you know, we're all desperate to get back to some sort of normality. Hotels and restaurants opening is really important.
We all want it, don't we? We all really want it.
But I think getting that clarity and the confidence just to do what you think is right or know what's right is really difficult.
Mm. Yeah, who'd be a decision maker right now? The only decisions we have to
Lucky
make
Boris.
are about wine, aren't they? so on which note, we have been, that's what's been occupying us. You know, while all this is raging, we've been focusing on the vital issue at hand, which is, of course, drinking.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, actually, to be fair, tasting. Lots and lots and lots of tasting.
You have been doing a lot of, oh my goodness, how many wines have you tasted in the last month?
I think it's around 290, although we may just have tipped over
around 300.
I know lots of people have been tasting lots of wines, lots of Bordeaux tastings, what we're going on, but I've been doing something slightly different.
We have had a lot of, good Lord, a lot of bottles opened in this house.
Yeah.
And you've sort of disappeared into your own little wine tasting bubble, haven't you? A haze of wine that seems to have been for hours on end.
Yeah, there are sort of coronavirus lockdown bubbles now, aren't there?
But I'm in a wine bubble.
Wine bubble, that's a lovely idea, isn't it? There's a product there, isn't it? But no, this is dedication to the job. That's how I see it. Anyway,
it is.
You know, so yeah, I mean, this particular one has been for a recommendations piece for Decanter magazine on lighter summer wines, you know, lighter wines for summer drinking, but wines basically focusing on reds and whites that are, you know, that you want to drink in the summer months, and really importantly, lighter in alcohol.
I know, and it's been absolutely, I mean, I know I'm laughing about how many wines you've had to taste and we've had all over the house, but it has been fascinating, because obviously
has.
I've had to taste quite a few of the better wines.
As you always are, but it's always good to bounce these things between two people, get the benefit of two palates.
But you're right about that low alcohol thing.
Exactly.
It makes such a difference.
It does make a big difference. It's not always easy. But we, generally speaking, tend to favour lower alcohol wines, don't we?
We do. Absolutely. For every reason, really.
Yeah, for every reason. Well, but also because, you know, we want to drink lots. And actually having higher alcohol wines, you can't drink as much. You know, it's a very basic sum.
There are exceptions. I'm going to say this right now. There are exceptions.
You know, exceptions.
Look at reds from Northern Italy and various other wines that are just naturally do have higher alcohol, but they're balanced, and that's the key.
Balance, it's all about balance.
And anyway,
usually those
wines
with high alcohol, they have high acid and really kind of grippy tannin. Yeah. Anyway, doesn't matter.
But I'm going totally
we do like lighter alcohol, but you know, it's not always easy to make lighter alcohol wine. So it's been fascinating to taste a whole bunch of them together to see which ones are best. Yeah.
And on which note, which ones are best? We're later in the show, we're going to be tasting and talking about one particular wine that stood out from this mammoth taste off. So we'll taste that along with a rosé from the same place, which is Sicily. And that's going to give us the opportunity also to have a quick chat about what is a really hot topic at the moment, and that's vegan wine.
vegan wine. So we don't want to get into that too much here. We'll deal with that later. Also, I just wanted to touch on this. You mentioned rosé. And just to say rosé, you know, we had that massive Twitter discussion after our last episode when we featured rosé, which was utterly brilliant. So thank you to everyone who got involved in that. It was just brilliant. We ended up getting so excited that I think we're going to do a full podcast episode on the subject of rosé, you know. So please look out for that and do send in advance. If you've got any questions, thoughts, do please use the speak pipe function on our website and send in questions and thoughts.
Rosé deserves a whole show, doesn't it? It deserves a whole series, a whole podcast.
It deserves a universe of...
Where's the Tickled Pink podcast? Where's the TV show?
Come on, let's see something. In the meantime, we are going to do something, but we want to see more.
Yeah. We do.
We also, something we need to talk about is our desert island wine picks.
Yes. Something I think we're very excited that we've been asked to do something. I'm not going to say just yet, but we're also dreading to have to decide what our desert island wines are. It's so easy when you're the one asking the question, as we've been doing for our guests with their quarantine wines, but not when the tables are turned.
It's not fair, is it?
It's not. I mean, how are we going to agree on our desert island wines? We don't agree on anything. How are we going to agree on desert island wines?
I didn't think that was the deal. I didn't think we had to agree on wines. I thought we were just being asked our desert island wines that we can choose separately.
Oh, that's better.
And surely, I mean, you can't expect to agree in a marriage. You know, especially on wines. I don't know what the rules are. We're going to have to check, aren't we? But I think the deal, well, we can pick our own ones. And then it's like a normal marriage on the island. You see, you'd have your own bottles in your own corner.
I wonder who'd drink it first. Oh, I bet mine lasts longer. Anyway, what we should say is these desert island wines wine picks are part of an Instagram live with the Wine Society at 6 p.m. on Thursday, the 25th of June. So if you can tune in, please do. We'd love you to join us. Mm. Maybe you can help us solve our marriage wine dilemmas, or just throw virtual rotten tomatoes at us or something.
I'm sure there's an emoji for that. An emoji for rotten tomatoes that you can show. Oh, that's not, maybe we shouldn't really go there. And equally, if you're listening to the podcast after this, you missed it, so too bad. So let's just get on with this, shall we? Let's get on with our podcast. So this week's interview is with the world-famous Italian winemaking consultant, Alberto Antonini.
That is such a great name,
isn't it?
I mean, I'm not a boy, I can't be Alberto Antonini, but it's like a black and white movie star or something, isn't it? Yeah. And he's renowned, isn't he? He's particularly known for focusing on elegance and terroir in his winemaking work. He advocates a natural approach. He rejects chemicals, but he very much prioritizes the vineyard, the work in the vineyard. That's what matters to him.
And I've come across him quite a few times over the years. We should be lucky. I always remember him. So the one quote I always remember him saying to me, and I'm going to do this in an Italian accent, and I really apologize.
Okay, I apologize too to everyone listening.
Okay. So he said, "Peter, in wine, less is more."
I think we're either Chilean or Russian, but I'm not sure that we're Italian.
There's a definite Russian to
less is more.
I'm just going to carry on in character. Okay, he said
Peter,
less is more, but to do less, you have to know more. And I think that stuck with me. In virtually every aspect of life that can apply, but particularly in wine. You know, when we've seen these wines that are ridiculously big, and he's actually working for elegance. And, you know, he said to me that a great wine is about emotion, which I love, and also that a great wine should be more about uniqueness than perfection. And I love both of those statements.
He's got a great way of putting it, hasn't he? Now, Alberto's based in Italy, isn't he, in Tuscany. Yeah. He's on his family farm, Poggio del Tondo in Chianti Shire. So during lockdown, he hasn't been able to do all his usual globetrotting, but he has been able to get out to see his clients in Tuscany. Mm. And now he's able to go a bit further afield within Italy, now that the lockdown rules are slightly being relaxed, aren't they?
But he still can't get abroad just yet. I think he is planning to start very soon. But, you know, I think things have been really hard in Italy, haven't they? You know, when I was in touch with him early on in the lockdown, he described it like living a nightmare, virtually. But then he also told me a story about his nonna, his grandmother. It was after we stopped recording. And he said she'd been like the powerhouse of the family, you know, the proper
They always nonna, are, aren't they? Are.
And he said, and she said to him, remember, in life, when it's difficult, the important thing is to eat well, drink well, and sleep well. He said, and she said, otherwise the problem goes from the size of an ant to the size of an elephant.
That is brilliant.
Isn't that brilliant?
How much did you take from this interview? Goodness me.
Many life lessons.
Heavens.
Why not,
I thought you were just talking wine, but you're talking life.
He's just a wise man. He's a wise man in many, many ways. And, you know, and we are going to get a double dose of that wisdom in this interview because there was a bit of an echo on the line.
Yeah,
so we'll apologise for that. It's a very mild echo. But I quite liked it because it almost made him sound like he was giving a speech in an amphitheatre.
You know, which is so
which
appropriate.
Which lends some gravitas. I think totally appropriate. Anyway. I started by asking Alberto how wine had changed in his lifetime.
First of all, I've been very lucky because I had the opportunity to develop my professional career during an amazing time, which has been, you know, the past 30, 35 years. You know how they have been. They have been incredible for the wine, which has developed all over the world. So without that, I think, you know, my career wouldn't have been as good as it has been. But obviously, there have been a lot of changes over the past decades. And wine is now, I think, is switching from something that used to be part of the meal, because basically, until 40 years ago, most of the wine was consumed in the wine-producing country. And as I, you know, I remember my parents drinking wine every day with every meal, but basically always drinking the same. So there was not a real wine culture, or there was not an experience. And over time that has changed because people now, they don't look at wine like part of the meal all the time. So I see my children generation, my oldest daughter, you know, she's 24 and she loves wine, but she doesn't drink wine every day. And when she drinks wine, she wants to do an experience. And the experience is just be more curious, to discover many different wine regions around the world, and to approach that drinking like something that can enrich you, not just give you the pleasure of drinking.
So that's a very interesting point there. We talk about youngsters particularly and society wanting more experiences. Now, this ties into your philosophy, doesn't it? Because you have criticized wines in the past for being bland, standardized, and just there to please a market. And what you want to do is to make wines that are more, in your words, authentic, that speak about the people and regions that have made them. Is that the way that that wine has a future, and especially premium wine that's more expensive, by you know, being telling a story in a bottle?
I remember years ago, the producers were really all very concerned about pleasing the market. I mean, just focusing on making wine for the market because they were afraid of not succeeding, etc. And it was also understandable. But now I see what I see, and what I think is really what has changed the world of wine is the producer gaining more and more confidence in themselves, which means, you know, focusing on the three magic components of this beautiful product, which is the soil, the grape variety, and the climate, and trying to focus and making the very best, you know, according to what they've got in their vineyards and in their estates. And that's a big change because gaining the confidence has really allowed the world of wine to switch from a little more commercial to more pure and authentic. So this is a process that I try to encourage my clients, that what I have been doing for many years, but it's not just me doing that. I think it's the whole industry which has, you know, develop.
But equally, is that not difficult? Obviously, there is a tension in wine because a lot of people will say, you included, look, make the best wine you can. Don't worry about the market so much. But obviously, you know, wine people have to make a living. They've got to sell their wine. So they have to have some consciousness of the market. Where is the balance to be struck there?
In my experience, if you really stay focused on doing very well what you are supposed to do, there is always a market for it. I don't believe that you had, because, you know, as a consultant, it has happened to me less and less because now my clients know how, which my answer is. They say, you know, the English market likes it, the American market, the Chinese market, and blah, 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 blah. I get lost. Okay, how can you approach the making of wine having all that in mind? It's like, you know, a musician or an artist in general, you know, how can you decide to do something having in mind to please so many different people? You can't do that. So now, basically, the focus has been more about trying to do the very best. And to me, again, you don't have to make wine for the market, but you have to find the market for your wine. And the balance is pretty easy to achieve, because if you do things right and you are professional, you are passionate, you work hard, and you end up with a good wine, there is always a place in the market for it, in my experience. Mm. So you don't have to worry too much about that.
Now, you can argue that global winemaking consultants are part of the problem just as much as they are part of the solution to this. What would you say to that?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, the category of flying winemakers, which has been criticized, you know, and I agree with a lot of critics that have been down to this category, because unfortunately, some people belonging to this category, they had a recipe and they were traveling the world with their recipe, trying to make wine for the different markets. But that's not the whole category. I mean, there are other people who go and visit their clients in different regions. And what they do is all about setting up a very good teamwork, bringing, for example, in my case, I bring in my experience, my vision, my thoughts, and I share that with the local people. Local people are key because they know the environment much better than any international consultant. So you need to work with them. You need to really enjoy the teamwork that you can create in any project you are in. And I think it's... if you do so, I don't see any problem. And also, I'm not an invasive consultant. So I'm not telling people what they should do. I'm just telling them what I would do. But then, you know, I'm happy to see some of the clients, they pick some of it. Maybe many they can pick 100%, but some other they pick like 50 or whatever. I'm okay with it. So it's my mission is not to sign the wine, because the wines are made by the wineries and by the people. I'm just helping them to probably achieve what they want to achieve, and they're missing some of the experience that they can bring in.
Talking of that, you know, you talk about sharing your vision with local people. Obviously, you know, you're a globe-trotting consultant. You told me once you spend at least 6 months a year on the road. You know, obviously, that's not happening at the moment. How have you been coping with lockdown?
Look, the lockdown has been a completely new experience for, I think, all of us. As always, there are upsides and downsides. You know, the downside is to see so many people struggling with their businesses, losing their job, and that really creates a very difficult environment to live in. So that has affected me a lot, because you can't avoid, you know, being involved in all that, because we are all living together. So that has been the difficult part, and is not over yet. Personally, I think it's because of my lifestyle, which has been very intense in the past 25 years, stopping for almost 3 months has been good to regenerate my body, but also my mind, has given me the opportunity of thinking with more time, with more passion than what I used to do before the COVID. And actually, I have been lucky, because I'm living on a farm, and as you know, the vineyards don't know much about the lockdown. So they started the growing season back in April, and I could go as a professional to visit my clients. So it hasn't been too bad for me, because I could travel, obviously, just in Tuscany, but at least you go out and walk in the vineyards and you feel that you're still alive. And for the winemaking part, I think it's has been difficult, but getting organized, really, I have done a lot of work, and I'm doing a lot of work with receiving samples and organizing tasting together. They send me samples over, and I have like 30 bottles. They had the same bottle on their sites, and we really do a lot of work, tasting, blending sessions, discussions, and really then you learn that you probably don't need to travel as much. It's important to have a good connection. It's important to be prepared to do that. But actually, I enjoy doing that. I can really focus very much, because I'm in my office with no one else around. And I think it's the results of this online tasting has been very, very good. And I think it's... obviously, again, it cannot replace going and visit your clients, but sometimes you probably go even too often, especially for the testing and everything. So
So actually for you, this might be a positive development in terms of allowing you to travel less in the future.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It could be because, again, you know, this type of testing has been very, very successful. And it's really, I'm happy with the outcome of this new way of testing with your clients.
Italy has been one of the hardest hit countries early on with COVID-19. How are you experiencing things as the rules are gradually relaxed, and what does the future hold?
In Italy, all the different businesses have been reopened for 2.5 weeks now. Difficult to say what's going to happen because it's too early. I think it's tourism has been hit very, very hard, very, very hard. I can't believe to see Florence empty, or, you know, just Siena empty. I was in Siena with my friends biking and got to Piazza del Campo, and was just shocking because in June, a Saturday in June, was almost empty. So it's pretty sad, and all the hotels, most of them are closed, and restaurants are struggling because obviously some people are okay with all the restriction and, you know, and the rules you have to follow. I think it's difficult at this stage to understand how bad it could be. It's we are at the very beginning, so it's obviously there are some businesses, like in general food is doing very well because people had to eat, and wines are doing well, especially in the off trade. Those that are selling mainly in restaurants are suffering more than those who are in the off trade. But I can only say that my grandparents were telling me a lot of story about the two world wars they went through. My parents, they were telling me all the story about going through one world war, which was the second one. And that was much worse of what we are living. And so in a way, you had to accept and, you know, get used to this situation, trying to go through and, you know, have the proper spirit, because that's important. I try not to, you know, some people get depressed or just... I think it's that's not good. You really have to struggle with yourself and be positive, work as much as you can, and go out and, you know, try to be creative and find solutions and everything.
That sounds very good advice. Thank you for sharing that, Alberto. Thank you to your parents and grandparents as well. What have you been doing to lighten the mood? I mean, I know you're a massive music fan. You've got a huge vinyl collection. You know, have you been boosting your collection with online purchases? What about your collection of vintage British motorcycles?
No, I have been listening to a lot of music, you know, so because sometimes I buy at a higher rate of what I can listen to. So just my collection get bigger, but I need to listen some of them which are still there. So I caught up with it. And I don't buy music in internet because I love to go to the music stores because it's too much of an experience. I have all my friends, all my stores around the world. And now I just, I haven't been buying in the past 3 months. I might be going now to a nice store in Florence because now I can go there, but and for London, New York, or San Francisco, I had to wait a little longer. But I like to buy and support the music stores.
Yeah, absolutely. And then final question, Alberto, what is your ideal quarantine wine? And it can't be one that you have an interest in.
Well, you know, it's wine is always about, in my case, is all about, you know, your moods. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and, you know, I have so many wines in my mind, so many wine regions. So it's each day is different. I have been trying wines from everywhere because it's and obviously depending on we had a lot of very good food because thanks God, my wife, Alessandra, and my mother-in-law, Maria Teresa, they're exceptionally good at cooking, and they have been, you know, less busy with all their own things, and they have cooked exceptional food. And depending on that, you know, from Barolo to Brunello to Malbec to just Rioja, so many, many, many.
Come on, you need to choose one. What about your mood now, Alberto? What would you have this evening?
Since I've got more time, I'll be more focused on testing Barolos, because Barolos, to me, they require a lot of time. You can't drink Barolo in a rush. Barolo requires at least a few hours to do the real experience. So Barolovic is, I'm sorry to say, because I'm a Toscan born and raised person, and obviously I would love to say some Toscan wine, but probably Barolo, the combination of the Nebbiolo with an amazing limestone marred in the region is making wines with the level of complexity, elegance, and intensity that's really difficult to achieve. And so I had several Barolo, and I had Barbaresco as well, and some Toscan wines. Brunello in particular, which is a wine that also requires time. So more meditative wine, having more time.
Say the phrase to us in Italian, because it sounds so much better. Is it vino da meditazione?
Da meditazione. Da meditazione.
Alberto Antonini, thank you very much indeed, Alberto.
Oh, pleasure, as always.
Oh, nice Barolo. Mind you, never mind his quarantine wine. You should have been asking him surely about what his ideal birthday wine would
be. Yeah, yes, birthday. I didn't realise. I felt really bad. It was, he, after we finished recording, he told me it had been his 61st birthday the day before. And I was completely unaware. But, you know, that made me think maybe that was why he was so reticent to pin himself down to one particular wine. I just wondered if he'd, you know, overindulged the night before for his 61st birthday and couldn't really bring himself maybe to actually envisage that particular bottle of wine, because he wasn't
sure
being pinned down, was he?
I'm
he wasn't,
not sure you're allowed to say that. Anyway, he's far too cultured for that, and I think he can probably hold his drink very, very well, actually. Yeah. And he looked great, didn't he, on great form.
Yeah, he did, actually.
Anyway.
He also said age is a state of mind, and I completely, with someone like him, you think yours is brilliant.
Absolutely.
So maybe I'm being a bit unfair.
Yeah, I think you might be.
Am I?
Just slightly,
okay.
Yes. Anyway, moving on before we get sued.
Sorry, Alberto.
In honour of Alberto's, we'll honour Alberto now, his Italian roots.
Yeah,
we wanted to feature a couple of wines from the seriously exciting region of Sicily, didn't we?
Absolutely, yeah. So we've got two wines here, a white and a rosé, both really, really exciting.
Both organic?
Thank you.
Both organic.
That's what I wanted to say as well.
You did want to say that, didn't you?
Of which there was a lot on Sicily. But anyway, let's start with the white, shall we?
Yeah, we should say that you know, Sicily, hot and dry, it's very easy to be, or easier to be organic. It's an interesting
one. Yeah, there are some places where organic isn't really suitable, but this really is.
Our first wine is Fabrizio Vella. Fabrizio Vella, Cateratto, 2018. It's organic. It's non-filtered. It's kind of a slightly, you know, a naturally style wine. An 11% alcohol.
Oh.
I mean, so this was one wine that really stood out in your tasting both of us. It's so characterful. It's got a relatively deep colour. It tastes of sort of orange zest and apricot skin. And it's refreshing. It's mineral. It's just uplifting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And really characterful. This is the thing. You know, so you think, and 11% alcohol. For me, that's the whole package.
It is the package. You get maximum flavour delivery for minimum alcohol. That's absolutely brilliant.
It's £15, isn't it, at Thorn Wines, which to be honest, I hadn't heard of Thorn Wines.
I think it's in a couple
before.
Of independents, but Thorn Wines are a great stockist, and I think at £15, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give too much away about my decanter.
I know you don't.
Because we can't, we have to
wait
for that.
It looks good as well.
You know, it's coming out, that piece coming out in Decanter Magazine, it's September issue, so out in August. So
excellent.
Lots of fantastic wines in there, but it was a bit of a gem. And what it made us think was just how exciting Sicily is at the moment.
Absolutely.
So that's what we want to get into a little bit, don't we? Because, Jancis Robinson calls it, Italy's most vital and improved wine region after centuries of stagnation in her World Atlas of Wine. And I was actually reading a book by John Sabo as well, the master sommelier, called Volcanic Wine. It's a brilliant book. If you haven't got it, you must read it. It's a fantastic guide to brilliant wines in volcanic regions. And of course, this is particularly
put a link to on our website to that.
Mount Etna and whatnot. He said in the 80s, there were only about three or four serious bottles of commercial Etna wine.
So Etna's one of the really up and coming areas.
But it had its benefits, because what that meant, the whole sort of an entire generation had forgotten about the vines, had gone to work elsewhere in tourism and stuff. But that actually meant that they preserved some of these old vines,
indigenous vines.
And
so
you've
we're
got
not
so many of those in Sicily. I mean, so this is Cateratto, which is not, it's not necessarily one of the highest rated varieties on Sicily. But this is lovely.
But I mean, this is lovely, and we tasted another one in the same tasting
we tasted a few.
That blew us away. You know,
have Really? What is it about? Good Catarata seems to have this sort of slightly funky, slightly earthy, slightly sort of mineral. I know that's a horrible word to use, a very wine-speaky word, but it's just
really
not
say
fruit.
Enough, but it's kind not of... necessarily fruit. And but they're just, they're vibrant. Mm. They're energetic. Yeah. I think this is it. They've got an energy about them. Then you think Sicily's a hot place. They're going to be all a bit big and heavy. Not at all.
And actually, especially those wines from Etna, because that's what often you get from Etna. People talk about the volcanic soils and stuff, but actually one of the key things about Etna is the altitude. And that's what makes the wine slightly fresher.
Yeah.
But so many of these really good Sicily wines are just fresh, as well as having that sun-ripened, sun-glazed
character. And we should obviously at this point mention the reds, you know, the Etna reds from Nerello Mascalese that have gone crazy in the last few years. And again, really fantastic wines. We don't have one to taste here, but worth seeking out.
They are brilliant, aren't they? We've got some Nero d'Avola and Frappato, also great grapes, which we're going to be coming on to in a second, aren't we? There's some good sweet wines, of course, from Sicily, Marsala, and some lovely Moscatos, which often get forgotten about.
Yeah.
And in
you've
the whites,
the full package, haven't
there's
you?
Caricante, there's Inzolia, there's Griglio. You know, there's so much. You know, the Romans had their Grand Cru on Sicily, and I think they realised how good this place could be.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing now is what it, you know, almost a revival, a renaissance of Sicilian wine. It's so exciting. And just to finish with this one, you know, John Sarbo's quote, which I loved in his book, he said, the surging energy on the mountain is palpable. He said, the reason is simple. The wines of Etna are unlike any others on planet Earth, and the world wants more.
I want more. I want to go to Sicily. We've never been to Sicily, have we? Have you been to Sicily?
Well, we sailed past it, I think.
We sailed past it, but never actually been.
I so
want to go.
I know we have been asked, but never quite made it.
No, it's just it's that being reacquainted with a place like that. You know, you start to read more about it and taste more wines, and you just think, oh, I want to go. Anyway, moving on to our rosé now.
Staying within Sicily, but the rosé.
So this is Santa Teresa, Rossa di Santa Teresa, 2019. You can get this from Majestic, $10.99, and it's a blend of Nero d'Avola, as you say, 50-50 with Frappato. And it's biodynamic, it's organic, and it's vegan.
And it's vegan. So it's a nice summery rosé, slips down really, really nicely. But we picked up on this thing saying it's vegan-friendly or suitable. It says vino vegano, doesn't it? And what is it on the back of the label? It says just vino vegano, but
vegano.
Suitable. Vegan-friendly. There we go. We like a wine that says friendly or
suitable. Vegans are friendly as well,
suitable
aren't they?
For vegans. But we wanted to just touch on this, didn't we? Because there is some confusion about this whole issue with veganism and wine. And many people, of course, assume that all wine's vegan.
Well, it's grapes, it's grape juice. Why wouldn't it be?
Exactly.
But it's
totally understandable assumption, but it's not. And it does seem, you know, at the moment it seems like the whole world's going vegan, isn't it?
It does. Now, we're not going to talk loads about this, are we? Because we're going to do a full episode on vegan wine. No, but we are going to obviously give everybody, you know, a little taste of it. But I think we'll do a full episode on it because it warrants it.
Yeah, that's the plan. It's a big topic. And I think it's of interest to lots of people. So I think it's well worth going into. But so let's start at the beginning, though, just to be very, very quick about this. What makes a wine non-vegan?
Yeah, so we're talking here processing agents, aren't we? And they can be from, well, caseins from milk-derived protein. You've got, what else, albumin or lysozyme from egg whites, or isinglass, which is from apparently fish bladders.
Obviously are acceptable to vegans. Now, you know, it's really important to say that it's not as if the finished wine contains or sort of retains any loads or any of those substances necessarily.
There might be a trace amount,
but they tend to get filtered out. And again, this is for wines which need sort of swift processing. They're fresh wines. You know, if you leave a wine in a barrel for 2 years, it will clarify itself naturally. But
it's some of the natural wine movement, and this Catarata that we've tasted here today, that actually is a non-filtered wine. So it is a bit hazy, nobody really minds because it tells you it's going to be.
But also, you know, we talked about clarifying agents. There are other reasons why a wine might not classify as suitable
vegan.
For vegans.
Yeah.
You know, so it's more because everyone in wine says, oh, it's just about processing it. It's not just about
a
bigger picture.
In biodynamic farming, obviously you're using animals in the vineyard, but equally you might use a cow's horn to put the vine treatments in the ground over the winter, and then you take it out again. So you're actually using parts of the animals which would not be acceptable to
vegans. I really don't think so. I think people differ, and this is one thing we have come across. I mean, animals are absolutely central to the philosophy and practice of biodynamics, and burying cow horns, as you said, to prepare these sort of treatments for the vines is an essential part of that. There's no getting around it, and I think most vegans would not be happy with that. But we do occasionally see wines that say biodynamic and vegan, which is not, I don't think it's on.
It's unlikely that's possible. But then you've even got things like glue on the labels, haven't you?
And in agglomerate corks, and you've got other issues as well. So I think really, you know, some wine people say, and we've heard this many times, haven't
we?
This is a load of nonsense. Vegan's a load of nonsense. And why does it apply to wine? Grow up. You know, you can never be 100% vegan because ladybirds die on vines and winemaking. Of course, people use compost and stuff. But that's not really the point, is it?
It's not. And when you know, we've talked to the Vegan Society, and they're I like their approach because they say that being vegan is about trying to do your best to minimize animal suffering. It's not about being perfect, but it's about doing the best that you can. I mean, they say, don't they? Well, they quote, you know, we live in a non-vegan world, so animal products are sadly used in most areas of life. Now, you know, obviously sometimes the animal might not be suffering, but it's just a vegan philosophy.
It's about the exploitation of animals, isn't it, that they object to? And it's about a journey. You know, they admit you can't be a perfect vegan, but it's about trying to minimise that suffering and exploitation as much as possible. And you've got to respect that because that's how a lot of people are choosing to live increasingly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the wine world probably needs to get its head fully around this. And a lot of people have. But, you know, I think we all need to, because people want the choice. They want to know how their food and drink's produced. They want clarity. They want reliability. And then they can make their mind up. They can make an informed choice. I mean, I think that's the thing.
It's probably important to add, we're not vegan. But we did do a project, didn't we, recently, Drink Well, Eat Well, where we went vegan for a couple of weeks and just to see what it was like, both in terms of the eating, because our daughter had asked what she was interested, but also in terms of the drinks, more importantly, what, you know, how easy is it to find these drinks, you know, and what are they like? So we did vegetarian, we did vegan, we did organic, we did a couple of other things. But the vegan thing was really interesting because we found there wasn't the information out there. You went to the restaurant and they had the organic and biodynamic wines marked. They didn't have what was vegan. So it's
about some people do.
Clarity.
Let's not say everybody's falls
into starting.
This
it's starting, isn't it?
It's starting much more. And I think it's just important. It's just, why not? You know, this rosé, this lovely rosé says it clearly on the label. It's simple. Let's just go for
that. It's not in your face, but it's there in case you want it, which I think is exactly the right way forward. So, you know, I think we will explore this more in a subsequent episode, won't we? So, keep your eyes peeled.
Let's keep our powder dry a little.
A little bit. But if you have any thoughts about this or reactions, please do, you know, get in touch on social media or send in a question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll do send questions because we'd love that for our episode. But for now, it's time to say arrivederci. Please do subscribe if you haven't already. Leave a review and a rating if you can spare a few minutes, we'd love that. Thanks to Alberto, and thank you for listening. Cheers.